Hello and welcome to Enabled, a weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. It is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, and this week I'm practicing proper social distancing and talking with you from my home. So thank you for joining me in my dining room. It's hard to find a job. It's really hard in these times or in any times. And it's even harder if you have a visual impairment. I have information for you that includes tips for getting a job and also some insight into the mindset of an employer who is considering hiring someone who is visually impaired. And there will be success stories as well. The first article is titled Giving Disabled Workers a Chance to Succeed. The information came from a magazine called Human Resource Executive Magazine. Their website is www.hrexecutive.com. Once again, giving disabled workers a chance to succeed. The article starts by saying, with a college degree in computer applications, Sheikh Mohammed Ali has worked for a number of non-governmental organizations in Karnataka, India. Here's a quote. My first job made my dream come true, he says, explaining that while serving as a technical instructor for people with disabilities, he was exposed to a professional environment and created effective teaching strategies. Those strategies would help participants develop computer skills and linguistic skills. Ali has been blind since birth. In 2014, he began contracting as a service request administrator for a global tech giant company called Cisco. This was in Bangalore, India. 2 years ago, he heard about a new program in Cisco that's called the Life Changer. In this, the company actively recruits skilled employees with disabilities through agencies, nonprofits, and universities for all open company positions. Ali was thrilled at the prospect of landing a meaningful full-time job at Cisco that would challenge his abilities, grow his skills, and expand his potential in a global work environment. A little note here about the company called Cisco. It's a high-tech multinational communications company. So continuing with the story of Sheikh Mohammed Ali, he enrolled in a pilot program in India in 2016. The following year, he was promoted to IT analyst, an experience he said, in his words, was the greatest milestone in my life. And he has since worked in the company's global IT services e-store. Since Cisco Life Changer, that's the name of the program, Cisco Life Changer, since this program launched in 2015, the company has leveraged the power of technology to hire roughly 100 individuals with disabilities from around the world, many of whom had experienced mobility challenges, hiring biases, and other barriers to employment. So far, the program seems to be a big hit, especially since this talent population has demonstrated 2.2 times higher productivity than coworkers without disabilities, and is helping the company build a talent pipeline across the full diversity spectrum. According to the World Bank Group, approximately 1 billion people, or 15% of the world's population, experience some form of disability, 15%. In the U.S., the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that the unemployment rate for Americans with a disability was 9.2%. That was in 2017. And it was more than twice that of those without a disability. Last year, this was in 2018, according to the article, in 2018, 32% of workers with a disability were employed part-time, compared with 17% of those with no disability. The Cisco Life Changer program, which was the brainchild of a vice president of sales at Cisco whose child was diagnosed with Down syndrome, this program uses the company's voice, video, and collaboration technologies to accelerate the hiring of people with disabilities. By doing so, it embeds disability inclusion into the organization's culture and targets an untapped labor market to fill its talent pipeline at a time when skilled workers are in demand. Here's a quote. The individuals are educated, motivated, and want to participate in the world of work, says Sherry Slate, who is Vice President and Chief Inclusion Officer at Cisco in Santa Clara, California. She continues by saying this is an opportunity to connect them to a career. The next section of the article is titled Hardcore Lessons. The program was piloted in different regions around the world, including the company's Technical Assistance Center in Bangalore. This was approximately for 1 year. Roughly 30 positions were tested, says Sherry Slate, pointing to jobs that included employee services and others in its advanced services division. Slate says the idea was to offer positions with career paths and make the program an integral part of the company's global practices and policies. This strategy required close partnering between talent acquisition and company business leaders to identify positions that would be a fit for the program. Although many candidates had the right mix of character traits for these jobs, some of them lacked key technical abilities to confront the challenge. They participated in the 6-month Cisco Life Changer Talent Incubation Program. Cisco Life Changer Talent Incubation Program. This involved technical skill building and certification as Cisco Certified Network Associates. Many of the participants had never worked in a corporate setting, so the program also focused on the development of soft skills with relationship building opportunities and unconscious bias training. So once hired, the individuals were provided access to Cisco's integrated voice, video, conferencing, and collaboration technology to maximize their job success. If needed, third-party accessibility software was also integrated into the platform. Then the participants were paired with mentors from the company's Connected Disabilities Awareness Network. Slate, this is Sherry Slate from Cisco now. Sherry Slate says this employee resource group also partnered with managers to ensure a higher understanding of workers' needs and their desired opportunities. Among key questions, adds Slate, was what did managers need to do differently when coaching, facilitating, and engaging employees with disabilities? Surprisingly, there was little, if any, difference from how they interact with employees without disabilities. She says effective management practices that inspire talent are the same for all workers. In 2016, the company benchmarked what they called the India Pilot. When compared with their coworkers without disabilities, productivity among program participants was 120% higher. They also had lower turnover and error rates than their counterparts in similar roles. Staff with disabilities closed 85% of TAC service requests in the same period versus the traditional TAC baseline of 60%. And that TAC, I looked it up, that stands for Technical Assistance Center. In a quote, "We had this incredible richness and perspective on the amazing outcomes and value that Life Changer could bring to the company when we were able to employ all talent," says Sherry Slate. "Organizations should ensure that people of all physical and cognitive abilities have the opportunity to have not just a job, but a career in each of our companies. It is our responsibility to make that happen and drive the partnership across our organization to ensure the structure, technology, and partnership is in place." And this is according to Sherry Slate from the Cisco Corporation. The next section is called Behind the Scenes. When creating a program like the Cisco Life Changer, HR, Human Resources, must ask a myriad of questions, says Leslie Wilson, Vice President of Workplace Initiatives at the U.S. Business Leadership Network, located in Alexandria, Virginia. This organization promotes disability inclusion in the workplace. And once again, it's called U.S. Business Leadership Network. And the spokesperson is Leslie Wilson. For example, how accessible is your company's career portal to those with vision impairment? Are they able to use screen reader software? Will it be compatible with your technology? What other types of digital technology can they access? HR has to think about this before moving in this direction, because they don't want to be embarrassed and say, oops, we've hired you, but we can't make the software programs accessible. This was a quote from Leslie Wilson. Then HR leaders need to drill down. What skills are really needed to perform the job? Does everyone need great communication skills or good eye contact? Here's a quote. That's ridiculous, she says, adding that recruiters may need to flex the interview process to accommodate those who aren't typical interviewees, but who can still perform the essential job functions. Otherwise, she believes recruiters or hiring managers will pass up great talent. Here's a quote. If you're hiring computer programmers to sit in front of a computer for 8 hours a day, what difference does it make if they have great communication skills, she says. Those things are really not all that important in the workplace today. Leslie Wilson says also, and she's from the U.S. Business Leadership Network, Wilson says some companies support talent acquisition champions who are experts on recruiting and interviewing people with disabilities. Although not everyone is comfortable interacting with people who are disabled, HR can reduce their anxiety. For example, she points to one employer that introduced sign language classes for employees after hiring individuals who were deaf or hard of hearing. The next section is called Comfort Level. A wave of new technologies is helping disabled employees perform a wide range of job tasks that many take for granted. Microsoft Word 360 features a text-to-speech app called Read Aloud. This app, Read Aloud, can literally read aloud web pages, news items, documents, e-books, or custom content. And this was from Microsoft Word 360. A program called IRA, or a company called IRA, A-I-R-A, pronounced IRA. IRA recently launched smart glasses that give trained agents a visual of what blind individuals can't see in real time, and enable the agents to talk to them through various work and home situations, such as navigating to a meeting or reading a restaurant menu. Since technology for disabled workers is catching up with the demand, hiring people with disabilities shouldn't really be a big jump for companies, says Chris Foss. She is the managing director at a company called Disability Solutions, a national consulting practice of a company called Ability Beyond in Bethel, Connecticut. But helping employees feel more comfortable working with people with disabilities and dispelling the myths surrounding them may be a bigger issue. Many companies still believe they need to make significant technology investments to support the workers, which most of the time isn't true, she says. This is a quote from Chris Foss. Foss explains that companies considering recruiting workers with disabilities need to create a platform for managers to express their concerns so they can be addressed before such programs are launched. Here's a quote, she says, "Don't overlook your need to talk with managers," adding that managers should be aware of both the value and potential challenges of hiring employees with disabilities. She continues by saying, "Do some training around the wide range of disabilities out there and the corresponding wide range of abilities and experiences and professional level that comes with that." Among the best ways to relieve executive and manager anxiety is to show how workers with disabilities can produce a return on investment. This is said by John Sullivan, professor of human resources at San Francisco State University. He is a global HR advisor located in San Francisco. John Sullivan, the professor, explains that HR needs to demonstrate how employees with disabilities can help build the company's brand, often stay longer, and, as proven by multiple studies, are more productive. Particular attention needs to be paid to hiring employees with disabilities for remote work. Without company policies, training, or HR guidance, managers don't know how to interact with them, causing some to feel isolated, not part of the team, and disengaged. Managers must stay in touch by scheduling weekly meetings, asking employees what additional tools they may need to perform their job, and ensuring that more than one IT employee is familiar with the technology being used, says Foss. Help desk calls from workers with disabilities also need to be assigned a higher priority to avoid their office being down for the day. Here's a quote from the Professor Sullivan again. He says, if you want to hire more remote disabled people, make sure that managers understand the benefits that apply to them, says Sullivan. Unless you show them the business case, they will do very little. If managers are resisting and would prefer instead to watch new hires instead of supervising them remotely, hire workers with disabilities for projects or contract work. This way, some managers won't feel they're being handcuffed, says Professor Sullivan, adding that many also believe innovation suffers if remote workers can't easily share their ideas with coworkers. People with disabilities can successfully work in many on-site or remote jobs, FOSS adds. Consider positions involving customer service, phone sales, IT, social media, and data analytics, to name just a few. Keep in mind that as your workforce ages, older employees may develop some type of disability and could also benefit from programs designed for people with disabilities. Here's a quote. As longtime employees, there's a very good chance they will age into some kind of disability. This is a quote from Chris Foss, who works for the Disability Solutions Company. She continues to end the article, companies are looking for ways to keep their institutional knowledge and keep their talent on the job longer. Being able to support them remotely by having these tools in place can keep top performers on the job longer as they age. This article was written by Carol Patton, and she's a contributing editor for the Human Resource Executive magazine. She also writes HR articles and columns for business and education magazines. Now we'll switch to another article. This is from a website called www.monster.com. The information is directed at the employer, but I thought it would help you to know what's going on in their mind. The headline reads, What You Need to Know About Hiring Blind and Visually Impaired Workers. This was written by Kate Ashford, who is a Monster contributor. Remember, Monster is the name of the website. The article starts, At a time when recruiters are facing a hiring shortage, and it's harder than ever to find qualified workers, you can't afford to make your jobs inaccessible to anyone. You're not only legally mandated to make sure your hiring practices are ADA compliant, but if your website, your interview practices, and your office itself aren't accessible and friendly to disabled applicants, you're doing your company a disservice by essentially eliminating an entire pool of potentially immensely talented candidates, just like that. These strategies, there are four of them, can help recruiters and low vision candidates see each other better. The first strategy, make your application process accessible. Blind candidates must be able to access both your job postings on your site and any job boards you're participating in and fill out the application itself. Web content accessibility guidelines can help you determine what needs to be done. Here's a quote. If I'm a blind person and I go to an employer's website and I can't even fill out the basic job application, that discourages me and tells me that that employer is maybe not all that serious about hiring blind people or hasn't really thought about it. This was said by Chris Danielson, who is a spokesperson for the National Federation of the Blind. Consider putting information on your website on how to contact someone if a candidate needs to request an accommodation to apply for the job or for interviews. If a job requires that an applicant complete testing as part of the interview process, be sure there are accommodations available for someone with low vision. As a quote from Danielson, Chris Danielson again, the fewer barriers there are to hiring, the more likely it is that you're going to get applications from blind people. The next strategy to help recruiters, number two, reach out to organizations that cater to disabilities. You can specifically interface with organizations that work with the blind and other people with disabilities, such as the National Federation of the Blind or the New York State Commission for the Blind. Here's a quote from Chris Danielson from the NFB. We have a job fair every year as part of our convention, Danielson says. Blind people have as many career goals and employment interests as the sighted public does. So there's no particular thing that needs to be done other than letting blind people know that you're interested in hiring and making your hiring process accessible so that blind people can participate in it. It's also worthwhile to spread the message at your company that you are looking to hire inclusively. Here's a quote. This one comes from George Abbott, who is the Chief Knowledge and Advancement Officer for the American Foundation for the Blind. Don't you love that title? George Abbott is the Chief Knowledge and Advancement Officer for the AFB. He says, often there is a commitment at the top of the organization, but it doesn't always trickle down to hiring managers or to the recruiters. This is again a quote from George Abbott. He continues by saying, make sure the organization as a whole is clear on their philosophy about it. And you may need to do some awareness training too. Now the third strategy for recruiters, know what you can and cannot ask. And remember, this is an article about advice to the employer. Know what you can and cannot ask. Before you've extended a job offer, you cannot ask a job candidate any questions that would reveal the existence of a disability or ask about the condition itself. For instance, you can't ask whether they've had any medical procedures related to their vision or whether a medical condition may have caused their blindness. You cannot ask that if you're an employer. That said, if the disability is obvious or the candidate brings it up themselves, you may ask them whether they would need a reasonable accommodation to perform the tasks required in the job. In general, however, you should be asking all the candidates the same questions about their relevant experience and why they're qualified to do the job. Here's a quote from George Abbott from the AFB. He says, ask a blind person the same questions you'd ask any other candidate and try to stick to that. Additionally, respect that candidate by not asking them things that you'd never ask any other job candidate, like how would they get to work every day? Chris Danielson says, every blind person has a story about being in an interview and being asked a question like, how will you get to the bathroom by yourself? This is a quote from Chris Danielson from the National Federation of the Blind. And he continues, what we'd really like to see more of is employers starting with at least a basic idea that blind people are generally competent to handle their own lives. The next strategy is to expect great things. The biggest thing we face in all areas, including employment, is low expectations, Danielson says. One of the frustrations blind people often face is that employers frequently just assume that they can't do the job because they're blind. It's a quote from Danielson, Chris Danielson from the NFB. Blind people are doing almost every job you can think of, he says. If it doesn't involve driving, a blind person is probably doing it somewhere. And as a general rule, the blind person wouldn't be applying if they didn't think they could do that job. In fact, you may find that hiring a blind person is a huge advantage because they can add a lot to your team. Abbott ends the article with a quote by saying, we spend so much of our day being problem solvers for everything we do, so we just naturally bring creativity and creative thinking to the work environment. And I think that adds value. Okay, the next article we have is a short one. It says, visual impairment should not be a barrier to employment. This was written by Kirk Adams. This is that inspirational story that I promised you. It was published in the Seattle Times. Kirk Adams says, I was 5 years old when I lost my vision. The Individuals with Disabilities Education Act had not yet passed, so I was not guaranteed an education in my local public school. You went to a special school and learned the blindness skills you needed, which is exactly what I did. By fourth grade, after learning Braille and learning how to use a white cane, I transferred to a public school. I did well academically, graduating Phi Beta Kappa with a bachelor's degree in economics from college. I began applying for jobs, getting phone interviews, and requests for in-person meetings. I'd walk in with my white cane and my Braille and ultimately would not get an offer. It's difficult for a blind person to land a job, even with stellar qualifications. A blind person with an associate's degree is statistically less likely to be employed than a sighted high school dropout. Often, employers who don't have experience working with people with disabilities can't conceptualize how a disabled candidate can perform the job's duties. As Helen Keller once said, "The chief handicap of the blind is not blindness, but the attitude of seeing people toward them." A quote from Helen Keller. These ungrounded fears contribute to the persistently low employment rates for people who are visually impaired. Roughly 7 out of 10 working-age blind people are not in the workforce, meaning employers are missing out on the benefits of hiring people with disabilities, including improvements in profitability, competitive advantage, and innovation. After all those unsuccessful in-person interviews, I changed my strategy. I was upfront in my cover letter. He said, "I've been blind since I was age 5. These are the tools I use, and here's how I would do the job." This he would say in his cover letter. Well, with that, I couldn't even get the phone interview. So I cast my net wider. I applied to a small brokerage firm in Seattle where the sales manager was a fellow Whitman College alum, an economics major. He called some of the professors we both had, and they said he can do the job. My career had finally begun. I spent 10 fruitful years at that firm. However, something was missing. Upon serious reflection, I realized I wanted to work in the nonprofit sector for an organization that helped blind people. I got my start as a fundraiser for the Seattle Public Library Foundation, raising money for a statewide talking book and braille library. I returned to school and earned a master's degree in nonprofit leadership from Seattle University. My path eventually led me to the Lighthouse for the Blind in Seattle as the organization's first blind CEO. 8 years later, I became the 6th president and CEO of the American Foundation for the Blind. So there's your success story for this program. And if you'd like to look at the website for that organization, the American Foundation for the Blind, they describe themselves as providing resources for people who are blind. And they also provide us with Access World Magazine, which is a wonderful resource. Their website is afb.org. They're located in Arlington, Virginia. Their phone number is 1-212-502-7600. So as a summary, today you heard about some obstacles that you may face when seeking employment. To end the program, I have a quote for you. "If you find a job you love, you'll never work again." This is Winston Churchill who said that. I'm just curious, do you agree? Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled on WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates, information, and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, reachoutradio.org.